Okay, and Teresa.
Janet K.
Can you?
Oh,
Janet.
I'm sorry.
So Janet first.
Janet, yeah. Go ahead, Janet.
Okay, so first I just want to piggyback on what Lawrence was saying. I think, didn't the League of Women Voters used to organize the presidential debates and then
yes,
they pulled out because, they pulled out because it's now controlled by the two
right, the two parties,
titanic parties.
Yeah.
But anyway, so is the time, including the time for this item, including the balloting and tabulation services? That was the other suggestion that Serene had made to divide this into two parts. We haven't really gotten to that.
You mean our discussion on this call, or the
our discussion on this call that
no,
we
no, that's coming
talk
up
about
next.
Personnel and then
yes.
That would have its own separate time.
Yeah, no, that was the next. As soon as we wrap this, then
I'll ask
people how many minutes we want to allocate to that discussion.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Yeah,
so
I want to talk on that too.
Yeah, yeah. No, we'll get to that. So, is there anything else on the outreach to organizations, or can we move
this
on?
This is Teresa. Teresa
go ahead,
here.
Quickly.
A question. So are you imagining, or people in the committee imagining, that as someone that's in political science, that as part of not community service, but some sort of service to get their help, some sort of grant or scholarship or something, that they take this on? Because, I mean, I'm just trying to imagine it because we've had some candidates that literally got in the face of our election supervisor and, like, were very confrontational. And I was just wondering, is anyone thinking about how we could, like, motivate people to actually take on this position to get course credit?
I don't see why that couldn't be an option. Why not? It's great experience. It's real life.
Have we
experience.
Ever tried that before? Has anybody any experience in approaching somebody about that?
Serene, Claire.
Go ahead, Serene.
We're in June. We're talking about doing a hire sometime during this summer. Most schools are not in session. So while that's a fine idea to pursue for some future election, I don't think it's feasible for this election.
You had time.
Okay. All right. So we're at time on this. So I will work on that letter and circulate it. And, you know, people should let us know who you're planning to approach before you approach them. Okay? So now we go back to the question of the opt-in versus opt-out for and let me just clarify, it's not just for the ballot itself, but for the ballot materials, you know, meaning the booklet that gives the profiles of each candidate or the self-descriptions. So, how many minutes should we allocate? I mean, we're not going to solve this tonight. We're just going to kind of explore, as I see it, we explore the pros and cons and the different dimensions to it, and then we'll have to come back to this. So, is 10 minutes, is there any objection to spending 10 minutes on this tonight with the thought of coming back the next meeting? Okay, hearing none, then Jim, it's at 10 minutes, okay? Let me start before we open discussion by actually reading what Richard sent us, which is the actual wording of the PNB's motion passed last year, and then that's a launch point for do we think it should be amended or is it fine the way it is or what do we think? And it reads, in order to achieve maximum cost efficiency and to increase participation, the PNB shall set as official policy in annual delegate elections the use of verifiably secure electronic balloting with the option of any member being able to opt out and in lieu of e-balloting to vote by paper mail-in ballots. And then it goes on to talk about tasking a particular director, Janice Lane Ewer, to research and present to the board information about at least 3 e-ballot vendors by May 9, 2013, for consideration by the IED in planning the 2013 delegate elections, which I don't know if any of that ever happened. But let's focus on the opt-in versus opt-out. So now, Janet, go ahead. And then
Teresa,
Janet.
For the staff.
Okay, hold on. Is Janet, Teresa, and who's a third?
James.
Jane. Janet, Teresa, Jane. Go, Janet.
So I just wanted to let people know that I am against electronic voting, and I would have voted against this motion had I been on the board then. But in any case, I think it's dangerous. I think it's not a good thing for Pacifica to be the first to implement such a voting system. And it really should be done in parallel with a manual system just to control it. It's the first time that Pacifica would be doing this, which is tricky, especially with our time constraints and all the other issues that we have. When it comes to opting out, I'm wondering how that would be handled, how those ballots would be tabulated, and by whom has that been thought about. And okay, so I'll stop there.
Okay, so I have Teresa and then Jane.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I think we have taken into consideration. Sierra Club does electronic voting. You can do it by sending in the letter, or each ballot has a code on it, and you can go online and you can vote online if you like, one or the other. But the opting out that I'm thinking of is, and this is the way I imagine it happening, we send a letter just like Sierra Club does, but Sierra Club might only have 12 candidates, and they're given each a paragraph, so it's not very heavy. But sometimes we have, 30 or 40 candidates, and we give them so much space that the mail is like over $1 each. And, I mean, we've had long debates in the past about whether we send it first class or how we send it. So the way I imagine it is we each get a letter, and the letter says, if you want to vote electronically, here's how you do it. If you want to opt in and get another letter that has all of the candidate information, call this number, and we will send you a list of a packet that might cost $1 or $2 to send, all of the candidate information. If they decide not to opt in, they need to go to a website and get all of the information on a website, which we've always had in the past. We've always had a website, but we've always said, well, it's not fair to those people that don't have a computer or don't go to the library to get a computer. So it would be an option to get it in the snail mail, but we would not automatically assume that everything goes out by mail because it can be quite heavy. And that's where the opt-in is.
Okay.
So there's two ops.
Okay. All right, Jane.
Yeah, I'm so glad Teresa spoke first because the original ad that was read, I think is awful for a couple of reasons. One, it precludes. First of all, there should be a PSA on the station, and it shouldn't be that the only thing would be an electronic outgoing message to say, if you can't vote electronically or, then do this. But the single letter where you call in would be good, except maybe with PFW, I'm not sure about the staffing. I'm not sure there's capacity for it and if there would be funding for that, because it's a little crazy right now. But what Teresa mentioned seems like the fairest thing to reduce costs and not require people to have a computer to have a voice. Because, again, it's unlike the Sierra Club. It's good about the efficiency and the idea, but Sierra Club is a much more elite because we speak to the underrepresented, at least. And that would preclude a lot of people who don't have computers, as was stated. So I think what Teresa's idea is sounds great, and what the original ad was sounds awful. And that's my vote.
I'm sorry, can you clarify when you said our original ad, what do you mean?
Oh, what I mean, whatever script was written, whatever script was read.
You mean when I was reading?
Yeah, I don't know
that,
if it was.
That was a PNB motion. It wasn't a script to go on.
Okay.
Here.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, that motion sounded really awful to me for all of the reasons Teresa worked around.
Okay. All right. Who else would like to speak?
This is Lawrence.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
May I speak?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm along with Janet. I'm definitely against electronic voting because it disenfranchises people, and you know, that's not something that I think that we should do. And when the time does come to do that, it's going to take a lot of thought and a lot of planning to actually implement something like this, you know, because, you know, one of the things that I see is that listeners should be able to have access to a couple of computers at the station if they wanted to vote electronically, and then there should be a PSA following that. In the absence of that, just saying that, you know, they can opt in or opt out and sending them to the library or something like that, I just don't think it's efficient. I think this is a very late motion, so I definitely don't support it.
Janet Kay.
Jim to the chat.
Okay. Jim, you haven't spoken on this round, so go ahead.
I agree with not actually pursuing or getting into electronic voting, mainly because we as an organization would have to set up some real strategic plans to make that happen. And most of our audience, most of our people who are voting are not used to us doing that. And I think the learning curve for us is just too much. And we have better control if we do what we are good at doing. That's my say on that.
Okay, and just purely as an
Teresa
informational. Okay, hang on. As an
Go
informational
ahead.
Point, let me read what the bylaw says about this, because we're, of course, bound by this. It says the foundation may, in its discretion, provide a secure means of voting by electronic means via the internet. Provided, however, that members shall still have the option of returning written ballots by mail. Any such internet voting shall have a coded system to identify members and to prevent members from casting more than one vote electronically or from voting by vote. Or to prevent them from voting. It says or from voting by both mail and by internet. So that's just as background, not pro or con, but that's what the bylaws tell us. Okay, so I heard Janet and then Teresa.
Yeah, so I thought one of the main reasons for going, possibly going with electronic voting, was to save money on postage and mailings. But if a letter is going to have to go out to say that you can opt out or whatever, that seems to defeat the purpose to some extent. I know the ballot, printing the ballot is, takes a certain amount of resources, but in any case, I don't know. Well, it just seems like it doesn't make sense to me.
Okay. Teresa.
Well,
Richard,
can you hear me?
Can you hear me? Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. As I imagine it, you send out a letter, and it has an envelope in it, and it has a letter soliciting money in it, if they want to make a donation, and it has a ballot in it. And I guess on the ballot, it says, if you want to participate electronically, go to this website and put in this code, and then you get to vote electronically. So I think we've addressed the bylaws request that we offer people the opportunity to vote through snail mail if they so choose. But I think we felt that for optimum participation, we probably should have an envelope maybe with prepaid postage on it. So we would be saving money if they choose to vote electronically. I think there was the first year it would cost more money to have them set up the whole process for voting electronically. Okay, and then the second thing they could check on there is if you want, and you can see the people, you can see the candidates' statements and credentials by going to this website. If you want this sent in the mail, call this number now. So there are two options there, and I think both of them have a way for us to save money.
Okay, Richard.
Margie.
And then Margie. Richard.
And also, Bobby, time is...
I'm sorry, did you say it's up or almost up?
Okay. Is it my turn?
Well, hang on, Richard. I was just told we're out of time. So let's we extend for 5 minutes? Any objection? Okay, hearing none. Go ahead, Richard.
A lot of this that I'm going on is hearsay because I don't really have personal experience with it. But I think the company that we hired in 2012 said they could handle the electronic. They were set up to do the electronic ballot if we wanted to do it back then. I'm not as paranoid as some of you guys are about somebody hacking into our system. It's different than mayors or governors races or something like that. These companies that do people like the Sierra Club and the other clubs they're bigger than us, way bigger than us. They're set up to do it. They know what they're doing. They have safeguards, and those safeguards would fit our bylaws, and it would save us a lot of money. And if we do the election like we did in 2012, that only cost us $250,000. So, some of that was because of the delays, but we gotta step up into the current century and do some things that'll save us some money. Thank you.
Okay, Margie.
Well, I was just going to say that I had reason recently to speak to the gentleman who's the president. I don't know what his title is. The man in charge of Election Services Corporation, who were the people who handled our last election, he said, if you are serious about saving some money on your elections, let me make you a proposal about electronic voting. And he talked about all of the things that we've been talking about. He said he knew that people were concerned about security, and he had good answers for that. And and he said that based on their, marketing blip-blop, I forget what it was called, that he believes that we would dramatically increase participation in elections and draw in people who have not voted in the past, people who are he didn't use the word young people. He just said people who are comfortable with using computers and electronic media. And he said, and he was sensitive to the idea that we would want to make it accessible to people who were not like the rest of us on their computers 24/7. Anyway, that's all. I just thought it was interesting, and he was both. He was soliciting our business. The reason I was talking to him was that we still hadn't paid him off yet from 2012. But anyway, we finally settled that bill. But he understood the concerns that we would have about this option. So I'm just throwing that out there.
And just a quick question, Margie. Did he quote a price for?
He said if you're interested, ask me and I'll give you an estimate. Yeah.
Okay.
Janet.
All right.
Kay.
All right, Janet, and then I think we're at time. But go ahead.
All right. Sorry. I mean, I hear what you've said, Margie, but this is a private company, and in a way, it would be sort of privatized voting. One of the things that, well, when the election happened in 2012, the tabulation took place in some far off place in Long Island, and normally, what had happened in the past was that the tabulation would happen locally, and there would be people who would come and observe from all different factions or whatever, observe that tabulation. That was not really possible in 2012. So that's another thing that would be lost. Anyway, that's
Teresa
concern
here.
Of mine.
Teresa for the stack.
Okay, go ahead. Quickly.
Is there anyone here that went to Long Island to see the tabulation? And my question is, do you feel that that having the tabulation in Long Island was sufficiently inferior to how we did it in the past?
Well.
Nobody went, huh?
Yeah, I'll speak for myself.
Hi, Bob.
Okay, thanks. Let me just answer the question, and then, we can see where we're going. I went a couple of days for the different counts of different stations, because each day was a different one of the five stations. And, it seemed to be fair and efficient, but as Janet said, the big downside is you can't have local people there because no one's going to, book a flight to New York from California to witness an election ballot count. So it's not that they did anything wrong. It's just that by centralizing it, you cut off local observers.
But the fact that you were there, I mean, you were...
And it was quite a distance from New York City, by the way. I think it took about an hour and a half.
Wow.
To get there.
But, I mean, is it really necessary to have, I mean, in the past, we have flown that election supervisor to each city and put them up in a hotel and had to find a place. Granted, I don't think we paid for the place where we had it in Houston, but paid for them to work all day to tabulate. And I'm just wondering if maybe I'm surprised that so they were there in Long Island for 5 days.
Something like that. Well, remember that some of the elections got extended, so it wasn't five continuous days. It was two here, then one there, then three there, or whatever.
Well, I'm not sure. There are other things that I think that we can discuss. I know we're getting short on time, but like there are other items that would save us money. I think that, for example, we must make a serious attempt to hold GMs accountable for the list of staff members, for example, because that was a major cause for extending an election and very, very costly.
Okay. Well, at this point, we're several minutes over time, so and we do have to deal with the next meeting date and all that before we adjourn, so... if there's no objection, I'd like to keep going on the agenda, and we can absolutely return to all of these topics, and we should return to them at the next meeting. Whoever is out on the street, could they please mute their phone? Okay. All right.
Have we decided on anything on this?
No. This was just
agenda
exploring.
Item?
No, this was exploratory, and we can come back to all these things when we have more information, hopefully at the next meeting. And see where we're at with that. So certainly if people want to do research on any of these topics, by all means do it and share it with the committee. Okay, so why don't we move on? Our next agenda item is report back on PNB action on the committee's motions concerning membership lists, cleanup, and any other motions and possible steps. Now, Michael referred to that motion, which basically said, actually, we had recommended it last summer. The PNB adopted it last summer, and it called for all five general managers to make sure that the lists were deduped and, you know, that bad addresses were weeded out so that there'd be a clean list come balloting time. And then, for various reasons, it didn't happen. So then we brought it back to the PNB's attention for their February in-person meeting, and they passed, kind of at our request, a reiteration with a possible timetable to have this done, I think, in time to have elections in June. So, and Michael, why don't you remind us what you had wrote us earlier about where that stands, according to Bernard Duncan. Michael, are you there?
Am I audible now?
Now you are.
Okay, sorry. I can't tell when the phone's muted and when it's not. I did raise it to him in the same letter that I wrote about finding out about the NES and the expenses, and reminded him that we also did need to have the GMs. So he said he would take that to a meeting of the general managers, and he made reference to that in my last communication with him last week, but I haven't heard results of that. At KPFK, we did raise the question, particularly of the staff list, and there's an effort underway to kind of validate and clean up the staff list so that it's current, particularly for unpaid staff. It's obviously easier for paid staff if they have a payroll. But the concern that our interim general manager expressed was, you know, how do you know that people are on there? So, you know, my position was that the first thing to do is get the list of who's in, you know, volunteering. Not only on shows, people keep thinking about shows, but the language is very clear that you can be an unpaid staff member, whether you're in the programming department or any other department. So basically the people in charge of, you know, volunteer coordination at the station and the programming department both need to have input into who qualifies under the bylaws provision for unpaid staff. And then that list needs to be, you know, checked with all those people to get current contact information. My suggestion was that if people do not provide their contact information, then they're dropped from the list as a way to get them to cooperate.
Okay, and let me just
hear, hear.
Let me insert a piece of information. I was doing some research on list cleanup services because this is not only important for elections but also for fundraising.
Yeah.
Hopefully, all five stations should be regularly sending mailings to their lists of not just members but anyone who's donated in a certain, you know, span of time. And those lists, you know, of course, are filled with addresses that have changed and duplicates and so forth. So there are various commercial services that do this, and they're quite cheap. The one I found, and I'm sure there are others, is about $8 per 10,000 per 1,000 names.
Wow.
To do NCOA, National Change of Address, which goes to the Postal Service, then MCOA, which is for people that didn't file with the Postal Service but moved, and there's records from other sources, and then a duplicate elimination. So those three services combined are about $8 per 1,000. So in other words, our stations, last I heard, range somewhere between 10,000 listener members and 20,000. So we're talking between $80 and $160.
Wow.
To clean up your entire list. Now, obviously, that requires then staff time after the cleanup, because then if it comes back and saying these 122 people are at new addresses, then you have to input all those new addresses. So it's not cost-free in terms of staff time, but in terms of the dollar outlay, it's very minimal. So that was just a bit of information. And that's one thing when anyone talks to a GM is to point out this is not just for elections. This is this benefits the station on multiple levels, not least of which is the ability to raise money through the mail.
Richard, was this back again?
Okay, go ahead, Richard.
Very quickly, I just wanted to echo what you just said, because that's what I think about all the time when we talk about cleaning up lists. It'll help us all around. It'll help us raise money. It'll help us all kinds of things. It needs to happen. It's amazing. It hasn't doesn't happen a couple of times a year.
Okay. Anyone else?
Michael, to the sec?
Yes,
Michael. Am I audible?
Yeah.
So we did emphasize that in the motion. That first of all, the California Corporations Code requires specifica to maintain a list of its members at its headquarters. It's a legal requirement. So even beyond the question of fundraising, it's just necessary. We did suggest that this could easily be piggybacked onto any of the mailings they do. For example, they do a year, a tax mailing, a tax statement mailing to all the people who donate as their donation to a nonprofit, and that could have been used twice now to clean up the listeners list, and as far as I know, it has never been done.
Okay.
Teresa here.
Yes.
Okay. Should we perhaps make a resolution, or should we ask each of our general managers to contact the organization or some organization, as you suggested, Bob, and clean up their lists and report back to somebody that they have done what was needed to clean up their lists?
Okay, let me clarify the situation, Teresa. We've already done that twice, and the PNB has ratified that, and you heard Michael say that he has forwarded that to Bernard Duncan, and Bernard said he would get back to Michael with the outcome. So that's in motion. We don't need to pass another motion. We don't need to reach out directly to GMs. Let's see what Bernard comes back with, and then we can decide what to do based on his report.
Okay. Well, since Bernard has a weekly meeting with the GMs, to make sure it becomes a higher priority, can we send another email to the IED and ask what the response was? I'm kind of concerned about accountability, because we say we tried this and it didn't work. Well, what is it? Is it 3 out of the 5 stations didn't respond? 2 of the stations didn't respond? Which stations didn't do it? Who dropped the ball, for example? If we know that, then we can perhaps actually implement some change or make
I'm sorry, point of personal Janet privilege. Janet K., point of information.
Okay, hang on. I heard a point of personal privilege. Serene?
Yeah, this is Serene. I'm going to have to leave the call. It's after 10 here on the East Coast. I have an early morning.
Okay. Thank you.
I thank you all for your participation. Good night.
Good night. Okay, Janet.
Yeah, Margie told us that Bernard is trying to look at the NES issue, make that a high priority. I'm wondering whether that could be added, or, Margie, have you discussed with him this issue, the staff lists, membership lists?
Yes, initially, I think it's been brought up at at one of those meetings with the GMs, but I hesitate to say because I don't exactly remember. But I'm going to talk to him, tomorrow. I'd be happy to talk to him about it and report back to the committee.
And request that be a high priority,
yeah,
too?
Absolutely. Totally.
Okay, great. Thank you.
I think it should be.
Very good. Okay. So can we move on? And we only have 10 minutes left, and we need to set our meeting date.
Michael, just a sec, briefly.
Yes. Go ahead.
The other piece of the deduping that has to be done is that once each station has its list, they have to be compared to each other, because the idea is that you can only be a member at one station. So that's got to be done naturally, both to compare the staff and listener lists, and then across.
Okay, wait. Now I have to write notes. Okay.
Okay.
Well, better yet, Michael, would you be willing tomorrow to just write a quick note summarizing that?
Post
it to the committee, and then Margie can take it.
Right. That would be great. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So let's move on with our remaining 10 minutes. We had reserved the possibility of a meeting Monday, June 23rd. I take it sounds to me from everything that's happened tonight that we should still use that time. Anyone disagree? Okay. So then I'll take that as...
I think I might be in transit on that. Let me just look. What time?
The usual 8:30 Eastern.
This is June the 23rd. Okay. I will be in transit at that time.
Okay.
But
that's fine.
Just so I know that at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time elections.
Right. Now, Michael will be unavailable, so we're going to need a secretary pro tem. And you don't have to write as extremely detailed and helpful notes as Michael does, but you just really have to make sure you get the motions, which lately there haven't been a huge number. So can anyone consider volunteering to just the one time only to take notes?
If necessary, I'll just listen to it on the stream and later, you know.
Oh, that's really kind.
5 minutes.
All right. Well,
Janet Kay. I'm not volunteering. I'm just suggesting that it would be helpful if motions were emailed. So
yes, that's always helpful whenever people, you know, even if it's during the call, if you can just quickly type it up and send it, that helps us all. All right, so we'll try to make do. It'd still be helpful if someone could be a secretary pro tem, at least, you know, if there's a motion that somebody's not at a computer and you have to just... Somebody has to write it down so we can have it read back before we vote on it. Just sort of that very, very minimal secretarial help would be really useful. So if someone would give some thought to just a very minimal, contribution to our process next Monday, that would be much appreciated. All right. So what that leaves is the July meeting. So if everyone can look at their calendars, and this might have been before we were streaming, I mentioned that Tuesdays in July are pretty booked on KPFTX, except for the 29th, but I don't imagine we want to wait quite that long.
No.
Janet Kay?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, the floor is open for suggestions.
Let me just mention that the Personnel Committee is going to be meeting on the 16th and the 21st. That's Wednesday the 16th. And Monday the 21st, I don't see it on the calendar yet.
Okay.
And then also remember that the first week in July is the holiday
week.
Michael, do the sec.
Go ahead, Michael, then Margie.
Tuesday, July 15th is the same situation as now. I have a local finance committee meeting that night, but that's 10:30 Eastern. So if we want to do it earlier, it's a KPFT development meeting, but I don't know if anybody on this group is on that. So,
well, let's ask. Are any of the KPFT people on the development committee? Any of the people on our committee, that is.
I'm sorry, which development committee?
The KPFT development committee.
I'm the chair of that committee.
You're the chair. Okay, so then we shouldn't conflict with that. All right. All right. My computer is very slow.
How about Monday the 14th? That's KPFK governance. Does that eliminate anybody?
No, it's the same situation. I can just take the call. in Lawrence.
Because it starts later. Okay. Let's do Monday the 14th. Is that okay?
Okay. Does anyone have a problem with Monday, July 14th? Going once? Going twice? Okay. That's without objection. We're the next meeting after this coming Monday, which is June 23rd. The one after that will be Monday, July 14th, as usual at 8:30 Eastern.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Okay. All right. So we have a few minutes before we must adjourn, although there's no law saying we can't adjourn right now. But if someone has something absolutely burning, the floor is open for a couple minutes. If not, we'll adjourn.
Thank you. Thanks, Bob.
Okay. All right. Thanks, everyone. Talk to you Monday.
Thank you, Bob.
Okay.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you. Bye.